All right, we are going to call this hearing to order. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Minnesota Senate Transportation Committee hearing of Monday, February 27th, 2023. The time is about 5 minutes after 3 o'clock, and we are in room 1100 of the Minnesota Senate building. Members and to the public, we have 4 bills on the agenda today, and I actually have the first bill up. Senator Jasinski, if you would take the gavel, I would appreciate it.
Power of, like, power of attorney.
Senator Dibble, Senate File 1448, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am presenting Senate File 1448 on behalf of Senator Latz. And members, this is the clone to a bill we had on the agenda that then we had to interrupt because of time pressures a few weeks ago. So this is that same bill, but this is actually the right bill number paired up with the proper House companion. So that's, if anyone was confused about that, that's what's happening with that. And Senator Latz, I believe, is, I was going to present that bill then too, and he was the chief author then, but he's once again otherwise disposed. Judiciary Committee has lots and lots of bills stacked up, and this one is headed there too, so yet one more added to the pile of judiciary bills. So Mr. Chair and members, this bill is following up on some work that the legislature had done in 2008, which established a law to allow those who are low income, homeless, otherwise extremely low income, to get their stuff from their cars if they have been towed and their car is in a storage lot and they don't have any ability to retrieve the car, and yet they need the stuff that's inside the car because it's really vital to their lives and their livelihoods or their children, or, you know, instances where it would create just tremendous hardship for them to go without those possessions. The reason we're back with some additional language that we're adding to statute is because the law did not work out as had hoped or been intended, and still people are being kept from their cars because of just some oversights and some misunderstandings, et cetera. So this establishes some clarification to the circumstance and process that individuals undergo vis-a-vis the towing companies and tow lot operators, and as well it provides for some remedies if the law is not followed. So, for example, it allows for proof of identity that includes a photographic identification. It provides for some proper public notification, supported, substantiated rationale and reason if retrieval of contents is denied. And as I mentioned, it provides some remedies, which you can find on page 3, should the law not be followed. It describes some of the things that would be vital for folks to retrieve from their car: medical assistance, Medicare cards, EBT cards, SNAP cards, letters, documents, you know, things like that. So with that, that's a very high level overview of the bill. We have with us, are you going to go first?
Hannah Anderson
will testify about the bill and some of the reasons why the bill is a good idea.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members, and thank you, Senator Dibble. My name's Hannah Anderson. I'm an attorney at Fagree Drinker, and I'm here to testify in support of the bill in front of you today. Senator Dibble gave you a really great overview of what the bill is, so I'll just give you kind of some background on how it came to be and why we think it's important. Over the past couple years, myself and my law firm have been retained by a couple of pro bono clients to assist them after their vehicles were towed while they were living out of those vehicles. In one case, the particular client was involved in an accident. Obviously, the vehicle was towed, and he had been homeless, living out of the vehicle at the time. When he went to retrieve his belongings under the statute that currently exists, he was denied access and told that he had to provide additional proof that's not required by statute. In that particular case, he had already provided proof from a nonprofit agency showing that he was homeless, and he had also provided proof from a legal aid office showing that he was indeed receiving legal aid services at that time. And so, as I'm sure you can imagine, when you're homeless and living out of your vehicle, everything you own's in there, you know, various forms of identification, medical equipment, medications, clothing, items of sentimental value. So we really just want to make sure that this isn't a problem that other Minnesotans have to face down the line. And so the bill in front of you really just seeks to make sure that there's some form of recourse available or some form of compensation available if this issue did happen in the future. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Otherwise, thank you very much for your time.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and I just want to add three things. First, thank you, Senator Dibble, for not only co-authoring the bill, but presenting it today. Second, I would like to thank the Minnesota Professional Towing Association, which has worked with us on this bill, and it is in the shape it's in today because of their collaboration and help. And I just would point to the letter in your packet from the association supporting the bill. And I, too, am happy to answer any questions and really appreciate your time today.
Members, discussion. Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, in the case there are no questions. Oh, Madam Chair, can you declare for the record that there is a quorum present, please? I haven't done that yet.
There is a quorum.
Just needs to be official. Madam Chair, this bill will have to make its way to judiciary. So, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 1448 be recommended to pass and referred to judiciary, where hopefully the Chair of Judiciary can present it at that time.
Mr. Chair, could you repeat your last sentence? I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I was just making a joke that the chief author, this bill is being referred to judiciary. The chief author of the bill is the Chair of Judiciary, so I won't necessarily have to represent the bill there, I hope.
Understood, Mr. Chair. Do we need a motion or?
That wasn't my motion. That Senate File 448 be recommended pass and referred to judiciary.
Okay, great. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay? Okay. Motion
Thank
prevails.
You. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you
so much. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Senate File number 625 in front of you. This we've been talking about for a while now. It has to do with vehicles being towed and putting a lien on. Before it was just the storage. We're looking, as you've probably seen some accidents in the past, have a large amount of debris on the road. What this bill would do would allow the towing agency to be able to put a lien on the vehicle as well with that. But I do have been meeting with stakeholders, and there was some concerns about homeless people or low-income people having this issue. So I'd like to offer the A3 amendment to address some issues we've had with the stakeholders.
Great. Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Senator Jasinski offers the A3 amendment. Members, any questions about the A3? Senator McKeown.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Jasinski, for this amendment. It does seem to improve things, but I would say that that's a pretty, like, small group of people that we'd be exempting from this, people who are literally experiencing homelessness or who are actually qualifying for relief services based on need. I am just wondering if there was any consideration in drafting this amendment of increasing it to include just lower income working people who would find this requirement to be perhaps leading them down the road to having to file personal bankruptcy or not able to pay their rent or bills on time. Like, we know that most Americans can't handle an unforeseen $400 charge of some kind. That's most Americans. So while I appreciate this amendment and the effort to make sure that certain people are being taken care of, the truth is most of the people that you're exempting from this, it would have been sent to collections anyway, and you would have never seen them be able to pay this because you can't force people to pay money that they just don't have. So I have concerns whether or not this is actually going to effectively allay concerns about this bill affecting lower and middle income people. And I don't know if you care to comment on that or if anyone has any background about the thought that went into that, but I do have that concern. Thank you.
Thank you,
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator McKeown. So we did meet with the stakeholders, and I'm going to turn over to my testifier, maybe go through things first, and then we can go from there.
And Senator McKeown, and I should have communicated this when Senator Jasinski offered the amendment. I also played a role in expressing concern, and we did drag Ron Elwood into the conversation, and I had some hand in, but I appreciate your question. Senator Jasinski.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn over to Mr. Klatt, and I think he'd be able to address that as well as the overall bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. Thank you again for the meeting last week. I thought it was a very productive meeting.
Please just formally introduce yourself.
Sorry. Lance Klatt, Executive Director of the Minnesota Professional Towing Association. I wear a couple of hats, so I apologize for that. So we had a productive meeting last week, and even though this bill, my towing operators are very concerned about a lot of this commercial towing with the tractor trailers and debris on the highways and the cleanup, and so we were saying, look, we can work with exempting people of the less fortunate, and I don't have any of the pictures here today, which I did, but in the meeting we talked about how there are, you know, ice shacks scattered on the roadways to somebody hauling lumber from Menards. So we're concerned about that. And then in the meeting, we discussed that, well, let's just work with, you know, the less unfortunate and work with legal aid on this. And I don't know what percent of the people in Minnesota did not have automobile insurance. I don't know if it's in the 20% or 26th percentile. So we're going to whittle that down to 26% of those people. But at the same time is, I don't know how you identify, you know, lower class or middle class. I'd probably think I'm somewhat middle class, but it's just a broad general idea there. So we're more than willing to talk more about this outside this committee or with Chair Dibble and with Senator Jasinski and Legal Aid again. But Ron Elwood, I don't know if he has another issue with this or not, but I don't think so. But I'm just trying to figure out what lower class and middle class means to us.
All right. Anything further, Senator McKeown?
Thank you. I can explore this later. I am also keenly interested in how advocates who work with people, particularly lower-income people, but again, we have lower-income people who qualify for benefits, and then there's also lower- and middle-income people who are really literally living paycheck to paycheck, paying bills, and that constitutes the majority of people in the state. So I have concerns about this. I really do. I don't know that adding liens to more is. I don't know. I am a little conflicted about it, but I can continue talking about this, and as the bill moves along, see if there's any changes that the author would consider later on. Thank you.
And Senator Jasinski, Mr. Klatt, this is an expense that an insurance company would cover, correct? Or the whole process of getting the car towed and retrieved and
yeah,
all
Mr.
That.
Mr. Chair, members. In most instances, but the reason why we brought this bill forth in the first place is because what's happening out there is through subrogation and the cleanup costs, some insurance organizations or companies are not wanting to cover the costs of the cleanup and the time of the cleanup especially when you're called upon by the state patrol or law enforcement. So these are all tows that our towing operators are accepting on behalf of law enforcement to come out and do the work. And again, about 90% of these issues, 95% are all commercial claims generally. And then Chairman Dibble had mentioned about, you know, how can we protect the less unfortunate? And that's where the meeting came together last week and come up with some kind of a A3 author's amendment, A3 amendment. So, but to answer your question, Mr. Chair, we do have issues with insurance companies not paying for some of the cleanup costs.
So the reason for this law, Mr. Klatt, is to make it clear and clear for the purposes of insurance claims and the like.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
And then can you also, what was helpful to me in our meeting. So my initial impression was this had to do with like radiator fluid spilled out on the pavement and those kinds of cleanups. This is about qualitatively different kinds of cleanups, like when there's a great deal of debris, cargo that's been scattered all about, and it's a rather time-consuming and labor-intensive undertaking.
Mr. Chair, members, correct. That is correct. It's not just about fuel or debris of chemicals. It's also a beer truck turns over and there's 22 pallets of beer on the highway and pallets. We have to bring a skid loader out and clean it up, bring another tractor trailer. It's a lot of debris, and if you don't mind, I could pass these around to the committee here. And you can see what some of the debris, this is I think like an ice shack here, but this happens more often than you think.
I had Senator Carlson, then Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm wondering about the insurance coverage, whether this is under liability, where there might be a deductible. Is this something that you run into? And do towing companies always do the work themselves, or are they subcontracting to somebody that is a specialty in cleanups? I guess I'm just wondering if there might be a deductible that they may enforce, and that really this comes back to the person and not to the insurance company, because they don't want to pay it unless you pay the deductible first. I guess I'm just wondering about who is actually going to be included in this, and whether a contractor that you hire would be under your lien capability, because they would have a lien against you, and you would have a lien against the automobile owner.
Mr. Klatt.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I hate to say this, I'm not an expert in insurance, so I don't know how that would be formulated. I'm not going to give an answer that I think I know the answer to today. I can get you more information, but I don't know how the whole insurance parties work and subrogation. I'm not an expert with that, so I apologize.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Jasinski. I have a couple of concerns, similar to what Senator McEwen was saying, but it doesn't seem clear to me in this bill that it would be the person or the car that was at fault, or the one that spilled the cargo. It just seems like if you're involved in an accident that has spilled cargo and you are towed, you could be on the hook for those charges. So that's a concern to me. If you are an innocent car in that, we wouldn't want to have a lien be able to be put on theirs for cleanup of someone else's cargo. And that doesn't seem clear in the bill. And then, you know, when we originally heard this bill, we talked about it really being targeted at those commercial vehicles, which I think is probably a rather expensive cleanup lift, and something that I would be probably more open to if we could target it in that way a little bit more clear. But then now, are we talking about people driving home from Menards with some wood in the back of their car who get in an accident, and then are we putting liens on those vehicles? That, to me, sort of opens up another level of this that I'm, I guess, less comfortable with. There wasn't really a question in there, but if you want to respond.
I didn't hear one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Port, again, we've had many discussions on this, and again, it was brought to me by the chair with some concerns about it. So I worked with them to come up with this, and mostly the commercial, I think commercial insurance covers this, and it's not an issue. It's you're seeing more and more of these ice house castles and campers and things like that, and I guess if you're low-income or homeless, maybe you don't have those, but we did talk about whether what was at fault and who it was and who was at fault. So again, I think we've had those discussions. We can continue to work on those, but again, this is just an effort to work with the chair of the committee to get some concerns addressed, which we did in that meeting, and I think by all the stakeholders that were there, we did talk to Mr. Cocking from the insurance agency, or insurance consortium, I guess what you call it, or a group, and talked about it briefly as before, but I think this basically shows that we're working with the stakeholders to get a bill that we can live with. So, and maybe you want to address it, some of your concerns as well, or your input.
Mr. Chair, Rob Layton.
Go ahead, Mr. Layton.
On behalf of the Towing Association, I think I want to put into context what the current law is, because I feel like we're not understanding.
Mr. Layton, a little closer to the microphone.
The current law simply states that when law enforcement requests towing operators to go out to the scene and tow a vehicle and bring it in, there's going to be a lien for the work done by the towing operator. Keep in mind, this is all at the request of law enforcement. They're doing a public service. When there's a huge mess on the highway, if there's hazardous waste spilled on the highway, or there's food or lumber all over the highway, law enforcement needs that cleaned up. They need it to be safe for the transportation community. So the towing operator goes out and takes care of all that. The problem with the current law is it doesn't contemplate that work being done. So the current lien is only for the towing and the storage of the vehicle. What we're saying is, and by the way, the pictures that you have, that's not a commercial operation, that's just a private vehicle. So some private vehicles create the exact same problem the commercial vehicles do, where there might be stuff spilled all over the road or in a ditch. So law enforcement says, we need this cleaned up to make it safe. All this bill is doing is saying, in those situations, when law enforcement's requested it, there's going to be additional costs incurred by that towing operator that's been requested to do it. The lien would then apply to all that extra work. If they spend 6 hours out cleaning out a ditch or a pond, they have a lien for that because that's work they've done at the request of law enforcement. That's all this bill is doing.
All right. Senator McEwen.
This happened to me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that sort of grounding in the scenario that this bill, or the current way this unfolds and the need for this. I think that
and I'm just speaking for myself, I'm very sympathetic to the idea that people need to be compensated for their work that they're doing, right? I mean, if towing companies are coming out to a scene of an accident like this and they're performing work and maybe they get stiffed and they never get paid for work that they're doing, that's wrong, right? They've been requested by law enforcement to perform work and they did it and they need to be compensated. I think where our concern, where my concern lies at least, is whether or not the appropriate remedy for that is placing a lien on not just the vehicle that was towed in order, you know, the cost of the towing to have a lien, but also all of the any cleanup costs, any the actual cargo, like that value is all of a sudden, I worry about lower income and middle income people not being able to get their vehicle, not being able to get their cargo that may have been part of an accident, all because we here decided to put that burden on them rather than saying there are certain situations, perhaps we don't know the cause of an accident or how it happens, that perhaps that cost should be borne by our law enforcement, our governments, our, you know, as a community, sometimes we should be bearing costs. So that's my concern is perhaps I don't know the answer to this. I don't have a firm opinion on it yet, but I'm worried that we're putting it with the little guy. We're taking it off of a small business and we're putting it on other little guys, and I'm a little worried about that.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Layton,
and Senator, the concern would be if there's not going to be any compensation, the tours aren't going to go out at the request of law enforcement to do these jobs. I mean, that's the alternative. I share your concern, and that's why we tried to craft an amendment with Mr. Elwood's involvement to take care of that in a way that we think makes sense. But what doesn't make sense is the current law where you're requested by law enforcement to do a job and there's no way to recover for 6 hours of work or thousands of dollars. I mean, I don't know what, I mean, to us, we think this is a fair way to resolve this problem because they really are performing a public service at the request of law enforcement. That's what's being done.
Senator McCune, are you good? All right.
Well, again, I don't dispute anything that was just said. My concern is that it's not law enforcement that's picking up that tab for the request that it's made and then going after appropriately who is financially responsible. We're just skipping that entirely and putting it on the putting the lien on the person involved in the accident. And I also share that concern that we don't know this situation in an accident, right? And who is involved and who's having the lien placed on them. So I totally sympathize with the idea that we need to have people compensated. I just wonder if there might be a better place for that compensation to come from.
Senator Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think one thing that we need to keep in mind here is Minnesota is a no-fault state. So if you're involved in an accident, your insurance company's gonna take care of your stuff, the other insurance company's gonna take care of their liability, and the insurance companies will fight that thing out. So you gotta keep in mind that this is, if you've got your liability coverage, which you need to have to be on the road in this state, your liability will cover whatever damages are out there, and that's why some of this is out there. So when you say you're loading it up on somebody, actually, if they got liability insurance, the insurance companies will take care of both of those, and then the insurance companies will figure out who's liable for what coverage and what damages, and it's up to the insurance companies to figure out who's at fault.
Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a couple questions. You always look at another state for maybe what they've done in the past. Has there been any other states that have, you know, changed laws for a towing association? I'm assuming your reach goes a little beyond Minnesota and it goes out to other states as far as, well, maybe not the Minnesota Towing Association, but I'm sure you know other associations for other states. And then also when you mentioned earlier if there's a large, you know, chemical spill that I believe would probably be beyond the capability of what a towing company would be able to clean up. When you have a big corporation that, you know, there's a couple that come to mind that would clean up a big chemical spill or a big toxic spill of some kind, how do they get paid in the past? or how was that done? Is that something different than what you're asking now, or has that often been a problem in the past?
Mr. Chair, Senator, to answer your first question, I'm not real adverse on the other state associations' legislation activity, so I can't answer if there's other states with a similar bill on the table. But secondly, if there's a large chemical spill, I don't recall a spill that has not been reimbursed for through an insurance organization. So something that big, you know, catastrophic, can't talk today, sorry, but that big of a problem, I'm sure there's probably not just an insurance organization, but maybe I can't ask for the PCA, but maybe some of the petrol fund or some involvement through the PCA at that point with a big chemical spill. So hopefully that answers your question.
Senator Lane. Mr. Chair, yeah, you did. I think I just trying to clarify a point where I think the problem in the bill is trying to fix is the somewhere in between, right? It's the folks that, you know, aren't these big high dollar things where insurance would take care of it, but it's also something that isn't cheap or isn't free. So that's kind of the point.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Lyonsky.
So again, this bill was brought to me more on the residential side or the non-commercial side. I think commercial's already doing this. They already have that. If you're going to have a business, you'll be towing, you know, things behind you. You usually have the proper commercial insurance. This was more the fish houses and the, you know, RVs and things like that that are getting bigger and bigger. So that's what it was addressed at. And again, worked with the chair to meet some of the requests of him and the stakeholders. But again, I believe it's a good bill. And if you want to continue on with your testimony, you were going to talk a little bit about that before we go through too much more. But we got to kind of caught in debate over one thing before we got to the testimony, so just want to bring that up.
Okay, Mr. Klatt, did you have more testimony?
Mr. Chair, members, I do not. Hopefully we answered a lot of the questions here today that were brought up.
Okay. Anything further, members? All right. I believe Senator Jasinski. Oh, we have not voted on the A3. All in favor, I'm sure that I assume there's nothing further on the A3. All in favor of the A3, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries. All right, so now we have Senate File 625 in front of us as amended. And if I'm not mistaken, it's drawn no fiscal note. Is that correct, Ms. Boyd?
No fiscal.
And it needs no referral elsewhere. All right, so Senator Jasinski, do you have a motion?
I believe, is this going to the floor or?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, yeah, we actually talked in our discussion about dual tracking it possibly, so I'd prefer to, if we could dual track it, maybe possibly laid over and as well as being put for the floor.
Yes, so, that's fine. I don't think that comes about through a motion. You would need to move Senate File 625 to the floor as amended, and then we can talk about where to pick up the language elsewhere at a future date, point in time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, I would ask for Senate File 625 as amended to be approved and sent to the floor.
All right. Anything further, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, so next up, members, we have Senator Mohammed. There she is. Welcome to the committee, Senator Mohammed.
Thank you, Chair Dibble.
All right, please proceed. As awesome. You choose.
Thank you, Chair Dibble and members. It's good to be back here. Before you is Senate File 15. Is Senate File... ...1585. Sorry, I have two bills in my hand. A bill that edits a statute allowing micromobility facilities and shared electric vehicle facilities to be placed in a right way of areas. This bill will make Minnesota cities more accessible, reduce dependency on carbon, and make cities cleaner. Before I get to the weeds of the technical definitions of the bill, let me make some context for you. Let me give you some context. Lime scooters and others like them have taken our nation by storm. Shared scooters and bicycles, both human-powered and electric, have increased accessibility to all the good cities have to offer. However, currently these scooters and bicycles are often littered all over our city. For example, in the city of Minneapolis, where I'm from, scooters have been left in our sidewalks, on the streets, fountains, even the ponds and lakes. And currently, Lime and similar companies recharge their scooters and other products by driving around and picking them up. This is highly inefficient and allows the products to be littered all over. Other cities have successfully combated this issue by adopting a legislation similar to what is in front of you today. It allows shared scooters and bicycles and other products to be charged in a centralized location and defines where that location can be. This bill would accomplish a similar goal for shared electric vehicle services, making those charging installations more accessible to customers. Right now, current transportation statute allows very limited exceptions for what can be placed in the right-of-way areas, the space on the edge of all public roads, which is often owned by government. Anything that meets that definition of advertising is generally prohibited in these areas, but statute currently makes an exception to allow advertisement, public art, and informational signs to be placed and maintained on bicycle racks and bicycle storages in right-of-way areas. This bill would expand those exceptions to include micromobility facilities defined as including both electric and human-powered bicycles and scooters, among other products, and shared electric vehicle facilities defined as installation for one or more parking spaces for charging or battery swapping for all electric vehicles that are part of shared mobility services. The goal of this is to make our cities more cleaner and expand resident mobility. Members, I ask for your support, and I will stand by for questions. And with me is a government relations representative from the city of Minneapolis.
Thank you, Senator Mohammed. Mr. Huser, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Huser. I'm a government relations representative for the city of Minneapolis. I want to start off by just thanking Senator Mohammed for agreeing to carry our bill this session. I'm not going to go real long. The senator did a great job of kind of explaining the issue, but we do view this as an ability for the city to pursue better right-of-way management related to micromobility.
Mr. Huser, can you pull the microphone a little closer to your mouth?
Oh, thanks. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Most common use is the scooters, but the language is crafted in a way that can be responsive to the market. There could be some other non-scooter, innovations that could be taking place. It does also include shared car charging capability. And we do, the advertising signage portion of the bill is important because of the public-private partnerships that we are hoping to use that can help defray some of the costs for some of these installations in the right-of-way. So I want to just thank the committee for the time and your consideration.
Thank you. Questions, members? Senator Lang.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's probably a good bill. I'm just curious of a couple of questions. When it comes to right-of-way and you talk about the scooter, and I know you mentioned the name, I already lost it already, but I'm assuming it's some sort of a charging station that sits on the right on the curb, correct?
Right.
Maybe clarify just...
Senator Mohammed.
Chair DeBoe, Senator Lang, that's correct.
Okay.
Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm assuming that, let's take example, the city of St. Paul would say, green scooter company, you can put your green, and that where that comes in the advertisement, right? That's in the past, that advertisement is not allowed, now will be allowed. So does the city of St. Paul, are they the arbiters of the orange scooter company versus the green scooter company?
Mr. Huser.
Mr. Chair and Senator, under currently local governments would have the ability to contract with the companies that would want to do business within this municipality. We don't have a statewide contracting or anything like that, so it is up to the individual cities to decide which companies they contract with and then who would be allowed to for use in the city-controlled right-of-way. There is laid out in the bill, and I'm maybe I'll anticipate a question that might be coming. Cities would only have the ability to authorize this in the city-controlled right-of-way. So if it's a county road or a MnDOT road running through a city, you'd still have to have authorization from that road authority in order to place these on that portion of the right-of-way.
Senator Ling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I'm assuming that there probably would be some profit at some point in time, right? Like, you'd offset the cost of electricity being used, and the city would make some profit, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it's a break-even thing where, you know, the benefit to the public is probably there, and that may be but has there been a local impact statement talked about, or possibly a fiscal note at this point? You know, just starting to talk about those dollars again.
Mr. Huser.
Mr. Chair, Senator, Senator, it's a question, and it's one that's probably not really addressed by the bill, but I think, you know, when municipalities are considering these contracts, I think that could be part of what those discussions are. Having the advertising signage available as an option for just even there is a value in that for private industry to have that. So that can help in some way defer their cost. You know, I think there's a benefit that they can view in a monetary value to that. But I wouldn't say that this bill really gets at that, but it's a fair question. I do have, we do have technical experts from the city here. If my answer doesn't quite get at where you're going with it, but.
Senator Lang, do you need more
Mr. Chair,
technical
response? There is actually a point. I'm assuming that when the section here about public art is kind of, it's all encompassing in the same, I don't know if there'll be a committee or what the city's planning on doing or whatever city that you may be representing. But I'm assuming this council will decide whether or not the art will be put up, whether or not it's, you know, controversial or whether or not it's well financially a benefit to the city, or you know it becomes a strange situation where all of a sudden the city is picking and choosing which company. Not that you don't already do that in some circumstances, but
Mr. Huser.
Yeah, Senator, thanks for the clarifying your question. Yeah, I think you know currently the cities would have. We do have the authority to contract with the companies that operate these businesses within the city. If this bill were to become law, we would continue to have the authority to, we would then have the authority to also, you know, determine what the advertising art would be, what other kinds of art would be allowed. So if there were to be art, for an example, that would be objectionable to somebody, I am sure that the city government would end up hearing about it from the community, and we would take corrective action as necessary.
Senator Lang.
One more. I'll change subjects. And this one has more to do on, on third page. Let's see, line 3.2, 3.3. This is a very technical question. 500 pounds at 30 miles an hour, and I'm assuming that it's going to be legal on the sidewalk, right? That's a lot of weight moving pretty fast along the sidewalk.
Mr. Huser.
Mr. Chair, Senator, currently the scooters wouldn't actually be allowed to operate on a sidewalk. They are meant to be operated in the street, so not on the sidewalk. So any of the anticipated future vehicles that could potentially be up to 500 pounds would not be allowed on the sidewalk, at least in the city of Minneapolis. I can speak for the city of Minneapolis on that.
That's a lot of weight clipping along pretty good.
Right. Well, it says the Senator Lang said it's not capable at a, so if you look at the line 3.1, so it has to be 30 miles. I mean, 30 miles per hour is plenty fast. But we definitely don't want scooters on the sidewalks going 30 miles an hour. I myself don't like scooters at all, as everyone here probably knows. I live in the heart of Uptown, and the scooters are a menace, but thank you. I'm starting to understand that they're here to stay. So the best we can manage them through, you know, more of these kinds of kiosks, I think the better off we are. So they're bad enough for zipping around in traffic, but then when they're left on sidewalks, obstructing people's ability to walk and use their wheelchairs on the sidewalks, that's when I get really annoyed. I take a lot of photos of scooters straddling the sidewalk and send them to the city. So, all right, I think I have Senator Howe next.
Thank you, Chair Dibble. And, you know, I've got concerns about, you know, traffic lanes and reduced parking. So with that, I'd like to offer the A1, Mr. Chair.
Senator Howe offers the A1 amendment.
And if we could have staff walk through the amendment.
All right. Mr. Greenfield, if you'd like to describe the A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Howe. I'd like to walk through the A1 in comparison to Senate File 1585. There are only a few substantive differences. Once the amendment has been passed out, I will go to page 1, line 11. In that second paragraph, paragraph B, the second sentence, the city must not place a micro-mobility facility in any manner that restricts, removes, or replaces a parking space or any segment of an active travel lane. That language is not in Senate File 1585. Similar change on page 2. That verbiage is also on lines 2.6 to 2.8, that the city must not place a shared electric vehicle facility in any manner that restricts, removes, or replaces a parking space or any segment of an active travel lane. And the final language difference between the A1 and the underlying bill is clause 4, right above where I was just referencing on line 2.3. This might be ahead of where testimony is going, but shared electric vehicle facilities would then include available for use by any vehicle, regardless of how that vehicle is powered. So that is a difference between Senate File 1585 and the underlying A1. So those are the three substantive differences. Otherwise, the language is more or less the same.
Thank you. Thank you. And Mr. Chair.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what I'm trying to get at is we've been seeing with bike lanes and a lot of things that are going on, we're losing mobility lanes. We're losing active transportation lanes that have been paid for with taxpayer dollars. And same thing with parking. Parking's a premium. And what we're going to be doing is identifying parking that can only be used by a certain type of vehicle instead of all vehicles. And so with that, I'm just trying to make it available that we continue not to get the congestion that we've been seeing, and we keep those active transportation lanes open, and we keep those parking places open for everyone to use, and not limiting it to just those folks that can afford to buy an electric vehicle. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Howe. Senator Muhammad.
Thank you, Senator Howe and Chair Dibble. I'm going to ask members to vote no on the amendment. We want cities to have the flexibility to be able to have the control over their railroads. So I'm going to ask members to vote no.
All right. Okay. Anything further, members, on the A1? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No. No.
Motion does not carry. All right. Members, anything further on Senate File 1585? All right, so Senator Muhammad, I believe Senate File 1585 draws no fiscal note, and I don't think needs any other committee stops. So Senator McEwen, would you like to move Senate File 1585?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right, all in favor of Senate File 1585 be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor, say aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Muhammad. Senator Herr, Senate File 718. Senator Herr, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm pleased to bring before you Senate File 718. And this bill will establish a highways for habitat program and appropriate funds for it, as well as funding for the living snow fence program. With the heavy snow weather this past week, this legislation makes even more sense of the immediate needs, our expansion to keep our highway safe, duty efficient, with help from our natural habitats. This bill empowered MnDOT to enhance the environmental and technical performance of our state-owned and managed highway right-of-way. The persistent support of a broad coalition of citizen-led groups has played a vital role in this effort. We will hear from them after my introduction. We also have received a letter of support from Nature Conservancy, American Bird Conservancy, Sierra Club, and Audubon, Minnesota. Senate File 718 also support planting additional trees, shrubs, and plants, wind buffers through the Living Snow Fence Program. These snow fences improve winter road safety, reducing blowing wind and drift and road clearance costs. The funds appropriate to this program could also bring federal match available for pollinator habitats and roadway programs. I'd like to thank Mr. Chair, you, Senator Dibble, Senator Morrison, Senator McCune, and Senator Jasinski for being co-author with me on this bill. And I should have done this beforehand, is to put an amendment in the shape that I would like to have, and that's A6, Mr. Chair.
Senator Herr offers the A6 amendment.
And Mr. Chair, I pretty much described the content of the bill already in my introduction.
Senator Herr, may I make a suggestion, if you would
yes.
be willing, because I think there's an upcoming amendment that might deal with one of the concerns that was going to be articulated, and that has to do with online 1.18. Could we change Trunk Highway Fund to General Fund?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm open to that as a friendly amendment.
All right, so we'll just incorporate that change
okay.
in the A6. Members, this is an author's amendment, the A6. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, sorry, I was getting that dispersed. Was it line 1.17 getting changed from the, or I'm sorry, 1.18 from the Trunk Highway Fund, from the General Fund? Are we switching that? Is that what?
Yeah, we changed that to General Fund.
The General Fund.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right. All right, Senator Herr, you have some testifiers.
I have three testifiers, one online. I'll let them introduce themselves.
All right. Whoever would like to start, please introduce yourself and proceed as you see fit. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Herr, and members. I'm Lori Schneider with Pollinator Friendly Alliance and the Minnesota Environmental Partnership Pollinator Cluster. Our coalition represents urban and rural people, scientists, and educators, conservation groups, and farmers. All of us care about the future of our world, of course. I grew up in a farm family, and now I care for a small farm with a herd of horses, pastures, and I coordinate habitat restorations in Washington County. In the work I do, I witness the circle of life happening all around me and recognize the interdependence upon pollinator keystone species and the importance of healthy habitats for every living thing, including us. To me, it's not just a heading in a news article. I'm witness and a participant, as are all of us. We know the loss of habitat is one of the main driving forces in this historical loss of pollinator and bird populations during our lifetime. For the past couple of years, a group of transportation and habitat experts grouped together and worked on the best way to collaboratively make an impact by not only increasing roadside habitat, but also working with the skills and resources at MDOT to improve road infrastructure. The Highways for Habitat program is popular with the public. It enhances the work MnDOT is doing and improves safety on our state roadways. Under advisement from other states that have had these roadside habitat programs in place for over 20 years, we know that the Integrated Roadside Vegetative Management Protocol, if utilized at its full ecological potential, can not only improve water quality and habitat, but also those deep root structures of the native plants and grasses, reduce right-of-way erosion, help prolong the life of roadway infrastructure, and reduce costs. There are over 135,000 miles of Minnesota state highways. Not all right-of-ways are created equal. The new coordinator for Highways for Habitat would be tasked with identifying right-of-ways that have good potential for this habitat program, such as wide corridors, existing plant remnants, high visual appeal, and are not at risk of being hayed. The old roadside wildlife program ran out of funding over 5 years ago. But Highways for Habitat is much more than that. It combines multiple benefits, including the road safety through the Living Snow Fence program, reducing operator injury, and costs through less maintenance. So those work hours can then be applied for more needed tasks, such as construction inspectors. We hope you'll embrace this popular state roadside habitat program and the work of MnDOT to facilitate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed as you see fit.
Thank you, Chair Dibble, Representative Herr, and committee members. My name is Lori Cox. I live, farm, and lease land with my family in Carver County. Thank you for the opportunity today to testify in support of Senate File 718. I would also like to thank the MnDOT for keeping Minnesotans safe, and we wonder how different I-90 might have looked if living snow fences aligned those stretches of highways. We've produced fruit, vegetables, herbs, with many crops relying solely on pollinators. We employ no-till cover crop rotation, CRP pollinator buffer, and naturalized hedgerows as a holistic system, similar to this proposed bill program. Observant ag producers know ecosystems balance their predator-prey life cycles, and when human activity removes those natural cycles, it comes at a cost. State agencies monitor and report these detrimental effects in our air, soils, water, wildlife, and us. I travel regularly through Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and Kentucky in all seasons. Public right-of-way differences are striking, but during winter travel months, I see marked differences in weather effects on road conditions. I observe mixed foliage, woody, non-mowed areas, and extremely reduced snow accumulation, drift, and it greatly alleviates chances for accidents. Habitats keep people safer and provide for wildlife. The more areas we allow in native or natural states, the more diversity of where it can be found is achieved. The U of M and state agencies suggest planting increased pollinator and bird populations that human activities remove. My 750-mile drive along a vast majority of ag acreages exposes right-of-ways mowed at peak growth prior to permitted timing. When I see milkweed mixed in, I remember it's toxic to livestock. Mowed down are not only seeds regenerating various plants, but nectar, eggs, larvae, and young avian stock recently hatched. Bumblebees and other beneficial insects live below ground, and they fly up when they're disturbed. Some characterize this bill incorrectly, stating that it conflicts with Statute 160.232, mowing and haying in public right-of-ways by permit only. It does not. Ag producers tout themselves as stewards. This bill benefits and perpetuates balance for natural ecosystems, water cycling, carbon sequestration, and roadway safety for all, All of us pay taxes to support public right-of-ways, and parcels do not boundary into or through any public highways. Our statutes clarify, and property tax statements prove this. The department can use discretion for this program to provide yet another safety measure while reducing overall departmental labor and cost. ROI for all taxpayers equals funding well spent. I humbly request your support for this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cox. And we have Hardy Kern, is that right? Remotes.
So, yes, good afternoon. Are you able to hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you and we can see
Fantastic. You. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Hardy Kern. I am Director of Government Relations for American Bird Conservancy. We're a national avian conservation nonprofit based out of Washington, D.C., but we have field biologists that work all over the country, including in Minnesota. We have many supporters there as well. And we are strongly in support of this bill and all the great it would do for the people and the wildlife of the state. One thing that is really interesting about Minnesota is it is a literal crossroads of bird migration. When it comes to birds flying north and south for the winter, going about their normal life cycle, if you look at the U.S., there's sort of four basic bird highways that are called flyways. Three of the four of them cross through Minnesota. That's incredibly rare. That almost never happens. So Minnesota is already a really important place for bird life. And every year in the United States alone, it's thought that up to as many as 67 million birds are killed by pesticide exposure from a variety of factors. And it's also known that the tens, if not hundreds of millions of birds are also killed by vehicle strikes every single year as they're interacting with human-made roadways, buildings, all sorts of things like that. And what I love about my job is that I get to work on state level policy all across the country and see different innovative approaches to bird conservation, to pesticide reduction. And Senate File 718 does both of these really, really beautifully. It not only provides more and better natural habitat for birds, it also reduces reliance on chemical pesticides, which is better for the applicators, it's better for the maintenance staff working along the highways, it's better for the communities that live downstream and downwind of any sort of pesticide applications. And there has been work specifically done on birds on roadside habitats. And every time that they've looked into it, they have found that roadside habitats that are more diverse, that haven't been mowed, have much greater bird species richness. And it's because birds use these areas next to the highways the same way that people are using the highways. They use them as corridors to get from one place to another much more safely. They can use them to nest, to feed. They actually end up reducing a lot of harmful insects, such as mosquitoes and some other not so friendly bugs that we don't want to have around. And I also want to say that in the state of Minnesota, the last figure I could find for this stat is a little over a decade old, but wildlife watching alone brings in over $620 million to the state annually. That's not including all of the non-direct revenue that wildlife watching generates. So fewer pesticides means healthier communities and waterways. It means more birds. Better roadside habitat means easier access for birds and more bird diversity for people to come to the state and see. And so American Bird Conservancy strongly supports 718, and we urge a favorable committee report and any potential co-sponsorship. And I want to thank you so much for the opportunity. And I'm also available for questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Kern. And additionally, we have Tina Markison from the Department of Transportation here to testify. All right. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Tina Markison. I work in MnDOT's office.
Ms. Mark, if you could just a little closer to the microphone. It's important to get it on the tape. Thanks.
Let's start over. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tina Markison. I work with MnDOT's Office of Environmental Stewardship. I am the Roadside Vegetation Management Unit Supervisor. MnDOT manages U.S. Interstate and state highways rights of way for multiple reasons, including but not limited to maintaining an engineered base and slopes to support infrastructure, water infiltration and conveyance, blowing and drifting snow, survey markers and roadside weather stations, aesthetics, including screening to and from adjacent land uses, and habitat for protected species. We appreciate the acknowledgement of the work that MnDOT is already doing on our roadsides. Senate File 718 contains much of the work and practices that MnDOT is already doing and has in place. One of the things I'd like to mention is that MnDOT has a sustainability plan that targets planting of native seeds, trees, shrubs, and perennials on MnDOT's large projects. This includes 75% of acres with native seed, 80% of plants on urban projects are planted with native plant material, 90% of plants on rural projects. There are a couple of things that I'd like to recommend for modifications or clarifications on this bill. While we continue to work with the DNR and the Board of Water and Soil Resources, or Bowser, the needs, soils, and follow-up maintenance on right-of-way versus typical lands revegetated by the DNR or Bowser differ greatly. Instead of using their seed mixes and guidelines, we'd like to see roadside-specific native vegetation establishment guidelines. Due to the multiple uses of the right-of-way, as listed previously, it may not be possible to avoid all habitat destruction and protect nesting birds, pollinators, and other wildlife. Some noxious weeds are used by native and non-native pollinators. This section may conflict with the Minnesota Noxious Weed Law. It's Minnesota Statute 18D. While the one-time appropriation would be used to enhance MnDOT's existing integrated roadside vegetation management, the funding is short-term. This short-term funding structure and the requirement to identify ongoing funding sources is similar to the DNR's Roadsides for Wildlife program, which ebbs and flows when grant and state legislative funding is available. If the goal is to establish a program similar to Iowa's County Roadside Program, the long-term funding is needed. Iowa legislature established the Iowa Living Roadsides Trust Fund to fund roadside vegetation management. As stated in the beginning, there are multiple needs for MnDOT's uses of the right-of-way. MnDOT will need some allowance to prioritize other needs above pollinator habitat to maintain road infrastructure and safety. We continue to monitor and fund scientific research on roadside vegetation management and update standard practices as successful research is completed. We are happy to work with the bill's author to address any of these issues. Thank you for your time, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Markison. Any questions, members? Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question I have, and you may not want to go anywhere, because the question I have is I have a lot of farmers that bail highway medians and road ditches for their livestock. Does this bill actually going to put that in jeopardy in any fashion?
Senator Herr.
Senator Howe, my knowledge on this bill, it will not put that in jeopardy, but if MnDOT like to explain further, I will welcome that, but you know, from the legislation alone, it doesn't do that. Am I correct?
Ms. Markison, can you help us understand how this interacts with the haying requirement or haying provisions in state statute?
Senator Dibble and members, I will attempt to. So just to give you a little bit of background, when farmers do mow and hay the right of way, we ask that they get a permit from MnDOT just so that we're aware of what they are doing out on our roadsides. At this time, the way it sits right now, this does not impact the state mowing law dates. So right now in, I believe it's chapter 160.232, road authorities are only allowed to mow right-of-way to right-of-way during the month of August. So as it sits right now, this does not change that requirement.
All right. Further questions, members? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, or her, sorry. Thank you for this bill. And I saw on Wednesday evening when we had the snow emergency and we got let go from up here, I went down and rode with MnDOT for about 6 hours along Interstate 35. And there's several areas that have fences that have been built in recent years. And I definitely noticed the difference between where the fences area are and where they're not, because coming across the fields and the snow goes up and over the road. So I think this is a good bill because it does this in a natural way. So I'm in favor of it. I think it does do what we're looking for. And there is a huge difference. If you look in rural Minnesota, when there is something along those freeways, it does stop a lot of that snow, prevents things coming across the road as much, and makes it much safer out there. So I am in favor of it. But I do have an amendment. I think it'll make it better, and I hope Senator Herr would be open to this. So I'd like to offer the A3 amendment.
Senator Jasinski offers the A3 amendment.
And Mr. Chair, I can explain it while they're passing
sure.
it out, if you'd like.
Please do.
What this does, it just deletes the words "and require," so it would allow MnDOT not to require it, but they can do it anyways. It basically would change line 2.3, and it would read "develop training for department personnel and contractors" instead of "develop and require training." So just leave it open to MnDOT, let them have some flexibility with that. So with that, I ask for a green vote, or a yes vote, sorry. I remember where I am.
Green would be fine.
Senator Herr to the A3.
Yes, Senator Jasinski, I appreciate your amendment, and Mr. Chair members, I accept that as a friendly amendment.
All right, Senator Herr recommends a yes vote on the A3. Anything further, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could continue, also one more tweak that I think we could offer. I'd like to offer the A4 amendment.
Senator Jasinski offers the A4 amendment.
And Mr. Chair and members, while they're passing that one out, this does on line 2.17, after the word "practice," it says "when feasible." So it would be changed to "the standards and best management practices when feasible must include." Again, it just gives a little bit more latitude to MnDOT and some flexibility, so we're not spending extra money doing those things. And again, I ask for a yes vote, and I hope that you would consider it as a friendly amendment.
Senator Herr to the A4.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you, Jasinski, for co-author this bill too. You know, we all have highway in our district, but I think more so in your district. So I think you understand that much more better than we do. And so this is a good partnership, and I will accept that as a friendly amendment as well.
All right. Senator Herr recommends a yes vote to the A4. Any questions, anything further, members? Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in support of the bill. I have a couple questions, Senator Herr.
Senator Lang, is this to the A4?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
All right.
I thought we were past that.
All right. All in favor of the A4, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for clarifying that.
Senator Lang.
Thank you. And this may be a Ms. Martinson question, too. 1.9 starts, and it starts talking about right away. And I, you know, over the living in southwest Minnesota with not a whole lot of tree cover, you see living snow fences kind of all over the place, and they vary from being an easement out into the farmer's field. When it comes to right of way, I guess the question I'd like to ask is, and this kind of brings up memories of Lady Bird Johnson and her Beautify America plan from the 70s or 60s probably, and then the complaints later on and the problems that we had with full grown trees and the right of way. Is this something that MnDOT would prefer a certain, would you rather be leasing off the right of way, the 10 feet off the right of way, and leaving the ditch surfaces open? Because it looks like it's a departure from what we've done in the past when it comes to this, the approach to the right of way. I guess that's the question is, and that leads into a few more questions then. Because it's, if you lease that from a farmer or you have an easement there, are you paying them for that, or is this a strictly in the right of way bill? I think is it you're kind of talking about two different things where living snow fences in the past have been done in a different way. That wasn't really a very focused question, but it was kind of an idea.
Ms. Markison.
Chair Dibble and members. We have a blowing and drifting snow program at MnDOT. We have a person that is in charge of that. That is not me. So I can definitely give you additional answers to questions. We typically work with farmers to determine, well, let me back up. We work with the University of Minnesota's snow fence calculator to determine where on the landscape that snow fence needs to be established. And then from that point, then we know whether or not can we put that snow fence in the existing right of way, or do we need additional right of way? And so that's kind of part of the process is figuring out based on fetch distances and wind angles and all that other fun stuff, where does that snow fence need to be? And then from there, then we kind of go down to the next level of the flowchart to say, okay, do we own that property or no? And then we, you know, go from there as far as do we have the opportunity to purchase an easement? Do we want to lease it? And so there's a lot of options that open up after that fact. With this money, it looks like it's acquiring, building, planting, and improving living snow fences. So that would, this to me, a layperson says that potentially would be acquiring, maybe would be leasing. But if you've got specific questions about our blowing, drifting snow program, I can definitely take those questions back and get them answered for you.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Lang.
I think, relatively speaking, nothing against the pollinators or any of that stuff, but relatively speaking, you're planting cedar trees or something of a woody, you know, a pine, something that grows quickly and has a lot of coverage to stop that snow the way it seems, and I think to good effect for that matter. But I guess the question is, how much acreage, how much snow fence can we build for the dollars in this bill? And that leads me into the next question, is that there's a portion of this bill that talks about signage, and there's nothing that irritates me more than being way out in the middle of a section someplace and seeing a sign that says do not spray, and knowing that the taxpayers of Minnesota paid for that sign, that I'm the only one that saw it, and thinking, you know, they could have planted three more trees if they went to put this sign up right here. So I'm curious as to how much money is going to be spent of this dollar amount for signage. And if it says do not spray out in the middle of nowhere, maybe as a state and as an agency, we can come together and say, you know what, this is maybe not the best use of dollars, and we can put another 30 feet of living snow fence in.
Mm-hmm. So, Senator Lang, we do have a fiscal note, which Ms. Boyd can step us through. I don't know if signs are touched on in there. Ms. Markison, in the meantime, while she prepares herself, if you have a response.
Yes, thank you, Senator Dibble. I will take it back. The question I had from you was how many miles could we potentially get coverage with the money that is allotted, and then how much will be used on signage. One of the things is we do like quick-growing vegetation, but snow fences depend. In the University of Minnesota's calculator, it also talks about density of that snow fence. What is the height? What is the width of that snow fence? What does that need to be? And then we try to choose plants based on what we're getting out of there. Typically, we're going after, you know, we've got a twin shrub row. That's a standard way that we have living snow fences out there, is a twin shrub row, so two rows of shrubs. There might be trees, there might be spruce trees or something included in that if we needed a taller fence. But also native grasses can be used as blowing and drifting snow control as well. So it really depends on what that calculator is telling us as far as what is the height of our snow fence that needs to be there, what is the density of it, and how many feet back from the road does it need to be. So it's we can definitely walk you through that if you'd like, but it's a pretty cool calculator that you can feed all the stuff into and get that information out from. Was there any other question that I missed that I need to get back to you on?
No, I think that's good. The only other question I had, Mr. Chair, was
Senator Lang.
I know that locally the especially when it comes to like standing cornfields, is that the county has done that. I don't know if it's more of a stopgap, but they step out, and what they do is they buy 30 rows of corn, 20 rows of corn, And that seems to be pretty effective too for some, I don't know. And it may be just a stopgap in the effort to get to that living snow fence. It's more of a permanent structure, but.
So Ms. Markison.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. That is another option that we utilize at MnDOT is we do purchase that standing corn row. Another thing that we've been working with farmers on is leaving hay bales and creating that snow fence with the hay bales. And so, yeah, there's lots of different options out there, and we like to be able to have all of those options. And then, of course, the structural snow fence, which I believe Senator Jasinski witnessed on I-35. So there's lots of options out there that we employ.
All right, Ms. Boyd. Oh, sorry, Senator Lang, were you finished? Yeah, Ms. Boyd, if you could just quickly acquaint us with the fiscal note, which Mr. I think was not included in our packets. So
I'm not sure Mr. why. Chair, I'm not sure why it's not in the packets, but it's pretty straightforward, and it probably won't take long to walk through it. There are several appropriations in bill which are acknowledged in the fiscal note, just the highlights. That MnDOT currently already practices portions of the requirements of the Highways for Habitat program, but that there will be assumed startup activities for this new program, and that's what the $1 million general fund appropriation for that program will cover. That includes administering training, developing and maintaining the website, updating processes within the department, updating MnDOT's best practices handbook for roadside vegetation management, developing and troubleshooting signage issues, and applying for and managing grants for the program. MnDOT also assumes that there will be a need for an FTE from the Environmental Stewardship Office to implement and manage this program. And that is, I believe, that comes out to $49,000 a year. And that is listed in the trunk highway. It's not appropriated for in the bill language, but it is assumed in the fiscal note and is listed from trunk highway since that's how the office is funded at this point. MnDOT estimates the $2 million appropriation for the Living Snow Fence program would cover 4 miles of Living Snow Fence. That covers a cost of approximately $275,000 per mile for trees and shrubs, and $140,000 per mile for installation of the Living Snow Fence. And that $2 million would also cover roughly 17% program delivery costs, which is a standard within MnDOT. What else? MnDOT's estimate does not include amounts for signs or plantings that will remain unknown until the program is implemented, so those costs are not acknowledged in the fiscal note. And then lastly, the $330,000 that was appropriated from the Trunk Highway Fund that the amendment just switched to the general fund for operations and maintenance, that will be used for vegetation management that will be needed over time, although the fiscal note does note that some existing MnDOT living fences do not need maintenance for 20 years.
Great. Thank you. All right, so members, our intention with this bill is to lay it over for possible inclusion. Anything further at this point? All right, so Senate File 718 is laid over for possible. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Herr, final word.
Oh, this is a good bill, so thank you for your support.
All right. All right, and members, the fiscal note is posted on the committee website if you want to take a peek at it yourself. All right, so Senate File 718 is laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Thank you all very much. Great job. Appreciated everything you had to say. And Ms. Ethier, do you want to tell us about Wednesday, which is going to be a full agenda of 8 bills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We will be hearing, as he said, 8 bills on our Wednesday hearing. We'll be hearing several bills having to do with traffic safety, including moving aside for emergency vehicles and in work zones. We will be looking at different moving obstacles to getting people driver's licenses, including easing requirements for new residents of Minnesota, and different, more diverse ways to have driver education received in the state.
All right. With that, members, we are adjourned.